Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhouseonline.com.au.
All right, if you're bored of going to the same old beachside town for your holidays, maybe you should start expanding your horizons. How about the moon? Yes, moon hotels could well be a holiday destination in the not-too-distant future. How about sleep hotels? Or maybe even communication-free resorts? You know what time it is. It's time for the Future Files with futurist Richard Watson from nowandnext.com. We're talking about the future of travel and tourism. Richard Watson, hello.
Hello there.
Well, we're already seeing some very interesting trends in the tourism industry. One thing that I've caught before is this notion of voluntourism. You take your annual leave, and instead of, you know, bobbing in the iridescent blue lapping waters of Lord Howe Island or something, you head overseas and do some sort of humanitarian or mission project or something like that. This really is actually a growing trend, isn't it?
This is really getting quite large. I mean, it's always existed, the idea of really sort of going and doing some voluntary work and doing something really useful lying on a beach, but it's generally been quite young people. It's now expanding quite significantly. I think there's a growing number of people that are just getting increasingly fed up with lying on yet another beach and not really going brown because you're not really supposed to anymore, and reading a trashy novel and getting home and feeling somehow unfulfilled. And, you know, maybe going somewhere and actually helping a remote community to sort of put in some proper sanitation or build a schoolroom, doing something really, really useful. And actually sort of linking with sort of communities you might not otherwise come into contact with. And actually it sort of links into a sort of quest for sort of authenticity and doing something socially and ethically or environmentally responsible and so on. And I think it's going to grow and grow, this area.
Yeah, this connects with something that we've talked about in the past before, this kind of growing sense of a personal search for meaning, and that, you know, the volunteerism kind of connects in with that. It's not so much, I heard one journalist put it, you know, when sipping margaritas by the poolside has lost its luster, go and do some volunteerism.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I think a bit of both works quite well, but endless beaches, I think people are getting quite disillusioned with that.
Sustainable tourism, is that related to this?
Yes, a little bit, because a lot of the volunteerism could be to do with sustainable projects. But this is really the thought that when you go on holiday, you should be having sort of minimal impact on the environment. And there's some other trends that link into this, like eco-tourism and sort of this rather ridiculous idea of eco-luxury, which is a bit of a contradiction in terms. And it's a really good idea in the sense, this is sort of linked to the idea of, you know, leave only footprints, take only memories kind of idea. Uh-huh. You've got to be a little bit careful. I mean, not too long ago, I went to an eco-resort in Fiji, and it had all the sort of signs saying, you know, look after your towels for as long as water and as long as possible, and the water's precious and all the rest of it. And, you know, it was really, really well run, but they were still sort of knocking out mineral water in plastic bottles. And let's not forget, the country was run by a military dictatorship at the time. So, you know, you kind of, you know, pick your values and take your choice really on that one. But yes, I think this idea of actually going to places that are built sustainably, run sustainably, and make a minimum impact on the environment is without a shadow of a doubt a growth industry. The problem, of course, is obviously if enough people go to these eco resorts, they're still doing damage. So
yes,
it's a tricky one.
So what's eco luxury?
Eco luxury is as ridiculous as it sounds to some extent. It's the idea of going to a 5 or 6 or 7 star resort that's sort of carbon neutral with minimum impact on the environment, which is, I think, a load of nonsense most of the time, to be perfectly honest.
Another thing that you're seeing is a growing trend is what we've seen, that these house swap kind of websites and things where you can log in and you can say, okay, I've got a unit in Melbourne, it's got city views, and hey, I'd love to have a holiday in Switzerland. If you've got some sort of little chalet, let's make a swap. That's a growing trend?
That is a growing trend. And the other thing that sort of links into this, I can't remember what it's called, but websites like Couchsurfing, where you can actually find a couch to sleep on, over the internet and so on. And I think this links into some other things, even camping, where, first of all, there's a sort of quest for value. If times are tough and people are trying to save some money, then simply swapping houses is a fairly low-cost way of going on holiday. But it also critically links into sort of authenticity and things, where if you go and stay in a chain hotel in another city, are you really seeing very much of that city? Whereas if you swap with somebody who's got a house in that city, you are actually getting a feel for how things work in that area, particularly if you're going to a different country. I mean, if you swap a hotel in Adelaide or Brisbane or something, or a hotel, a house in Adelaide or Brisbane or something, for a house in, you know, Paris or Milan, you really get a strong sense of what it's like to live there, as opposed to, you know, the Holiday Inn, which looks exactly like the Holiday Inn everywhere else.
Yes. Now, this one is under the trends section. When we have these conversations, we always talk about some trends, some predictions. You've got this one under the trends section of space tourism. Now, we keep on hearing about the idea that, yes, it's, you know, it might be there in the future, and we might populate other planets. But space, is it actually really a trend rather than a prediction? It's actually on its way?
Well, it's a trend in this, yes, because it's actually happening. I mean, it started with some extremely rich Americans and Russians, I think it was, that basically hired their own space rocket to go out into space to see what it was like. And we are on the cusp of, I mean, people are paying deposits, for example, with Virgin, to actually go into space as a tourist. I mean, we're a matter of a year or two away from that, and people are paying money for it. So I would say that was an absolute trend. You know, it's got a bit further to go before it sort of ends up in a holiday brochure in the local high street. But yes, I think it looks like a real one. And we, you know, it's interesting because we've had been speculating about this for 20 or 30 years that one day you might be able to do this, and we're now actually seeing it happen.
When we've spoken to people from NASA before and everything in the past, the idea has kind of been, well, you'll be able to get to a certain height of the sky, you know, where you'll be able to experience zero gravity, but actually heading out to some sort of space station or something will be something completely different. Now, has that changed?
No, I think they're absolutely still right. I mean, we're talking about going extremely high up so you can have some kind of weightless conditions and, you know, have a rather wonderful view of the Earth. We're not talking about going into deep space or landing on the moon or going to a sort of space station or anything. Yes. Not anywhere near at the moment.
Still be a lot of fun, but imagine the cost of the seats to go up on that trip.
Yeah, quite a lot.
Imagine. Richard Watson is a futurist, and he joins us every fortnight to talk about some trends and some predictions. Tonight, the future of travel and tourism. Okay, some predictions. Last time we spoke to you, we heard about driverless cars and trucks. That's scary enough, but pilotless planes?
Well, again, they kind of exist. I mean, most of these planes you would jump on are sort of fly-by-wire, and they are, you know, it's the software controlling the plane, not the pilot. It's quite often that taking off and landing. It's just that we're really uncomfortable with removing the pilot from the situation. I certainly wouldn't be very happy to get on a plane, no matter how good the computer, if there wasn't a pilot sitting there as well, and ideally too. But from a technological point of view, we're already at the stage where we don't really need the pilot.
Yes. Well, actually, in defence, we actually have some pilotless planes that are being used, you know, to go and bomb things, aren't
they? Well, the drones, that's a sort of major growth area. Yes, it's the unmanned drones that are, at the moment, they're really just going up with cameras looking at things, but we equally do have them that are actually armed as well and can actually blow the hell out of things.
Well, we've got lots of low-cost airlines at the moment, so who knows? It might just be another way of cutting costs in the future. Now, when I go to a hotel, the first thing I'm looking for is Wi-Fi. In fact, the first thing I'm looking for is free Wi-Fi these days. You're suggesting we might see an opposite trend where we actually have communication-free resorts.
Yeah, I think there's a sort of tipping point approaching on this. I mean, at the moment, I'm the same. The first thing I almost want to do is check on my email. And there was a survey recently by, I think it was TripAdvisor, that said about 75% of people couldn't go for 2 days on holiday without checking their email. And I was in Greece last year sitting around a pool, and there were about a dozen people around the pool. Every single one of them was on a phone or a BlackBerry. I mean, you kind of wonder why they even bother going, really. So I think there's going to be a sort of counter trend to this, where people are just going to burn out from getting all these emails and all this communication, and they just want to go somewhere where their phone doesn't work, where they cannot be reached at all, just to give their brain a rest, effectively. Yes. Now, that could be just somewhere incredibly remote where none of this stuff works, or it could be that it's a place where they're actually banned and they've got special screening materials to actually stop these things from working.
It's almost an act of self-discipline, isn't it? We don't actually have the self-discipline to do it by simply, you know, switching it off and not going back to it. So if we go to an area where we know we can't actually access that, I think you're probably quite right, simply because we can't discipline ourselves to actually not go back to the phone or to the laptop.
Well, I think this is actually a form of addiction. This need to be constantly online or constantly be checking email. And you see this when you get off an airplane. I have to say, I do this myself. The minute the plane lands, and I think Qantas are better at this than Virgin, they say you can switch your phone on now if it's within reach, and three-quarters of the plane dive for their phone because they cannot wait for the 5 minutes until they get into the terminal. So I think, you know, you need to look at this in the sense of, you know, maybe you've got an alcohol problem and you go into a clinic to be weaned off alcohol. I think you'll probably check into a resort to be weaned off email and texting.
1-300-40-20-20 is my number. Do you agree with Richard that it might get to the stage where we actually have to do that? Would you do that simply because you can't discipline yourself to not turn the phone back on? Sleep hotels as well, Richard.
Yeah, this is a similar sort of thing, really, in many ways. We're just burning out. We're living this sort of 24/7 culture, and we're not sleeping as much as we used to. I think in America in 1900, people slept on average for 9 hours a night. It's now down to 6.7, and we should really be getting 8 hours a night. And sleep's pretty important. I mean, sleep is good for our sort of physical health. It's also good for our mental health. It's also really quite critical in terms of our thinking and how we come up with ideas, that we get enough sleep, because we do a lot of thinking when we're actually asleep. So, and we're getting interrupted. You know, we've got phones going off. We're doing internet banking at 2 o'clock in the morning. And I think it's going to be increasingly important and recognised that we need to get a decent amount of sleep. So I think, again, we will be checking into the sort of effectively the old spa hotels of old, where they actually force you to have a decent night's sleep. And it's interesting how a lot of these hotels now are really investing in the bed. And they talk a lot about, you know, the quality of sleep in their hotel versus somebody else. So I think we're beginning to sort of recognise that sleep's a bit of an issue with modern society.
The future of travel and tourism. Richard Watson, always good to talk to you. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Richard Watson, futurist from nowandnext.com.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology. To hear more from Open House, visit openhouseonline.com.au.